This is Eurocock.
Show, a different show. I'm going to be talking to some of my buddies and going to be doing kind of like a top five Giallo list with some people and others who didn't really want to do that, just general Giallo talk. And through the process, I'm going to go through my five Giallos, which I don't think there's going to be any bump into these movies because of the, you know, unless there's some kind of hidden gem, which I've seen a lot, and I have a lot of these movies. So, in number five, I'm beginning with the director who actually, I believe, brought the first Giallo to movie screens in a movie called The Girl Who Knew Too Much or The Evil Eye in 64. That's a pretty cool movie in itself, but of his movies, as far as Giallos are concerned, I'm going to have to choose Blood and Black Lace as my number five entry. I think the movie has a lot of cool stuff going on, a lot of creative deaths, and one of the first entries, I believe, that has the Black Glove Killer. And, I mean, watching a DVD, I haven't watched it in a while, but there's really brutal stuff going on there, some, at least in 1964 when it was released. So that was my choice for number five. And the first segment I have here is with me and Jason Payne, just kind of talking and bullcrapping a little bit. So it's kind of joint in progress. So I hope you like it. Here we go.
Wow.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I hate that kind of stuff, dude.
What?
I mean, like I said, the things that I've seen, the bits and pieces I've seen of all that stuff, I just can't get into it. Like,
they're just,
you know,
sleazy. They're just sleazy mysteries.
Well, that means there's more for you to buy because you're not having to compete with me about picking them all up.
Yeah, I'm going to use this now because we're going on about it. Counterpoint. Counterpoint.
Well, go ahead, dude.
Yeah, you want to go?
If you want to get obliterated,
yeah.
My keen awareness of the Giallo genre. Let's go right on ahead. I don't want to make you look bad on your own show, but, you know.
Yeah.
No, man. Like, you know, you're the Giallo master, and I'm the Giallo master...
Apprentice.
Master apprentice. No.
Well, I mean...
I know I said about it, so...
What's the sleaziest movie you've seen? I think maybe Toolbox Murders?
Oh, I see on your grave.
Okay, well, I mean...
That's pretty sleazy.
Take Toolbox Murders, for instance. There are scenes in that that remind me of a Giallo. Even, I mean, slashers are Giallos that are stripped down with all the extra subtext and all that stuff.
Right.
What does that mean? That's a right that's a conceited, you know, you're having some kind of, that's a facetious right. You don't really agree with me, you're just saying right, laughingly, right?
No. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I understand that, you know, the bastard child of Giallos are slashers. I mean, I understand the history of that, you know, and everything. And I respect, you know,
respect
what they do in some ways. But at the same time, I mean, like, the ones I've seen and the ones I've heard about, and aside from Deep Red, everybody talks really highly about Deep Red, so I don't really want to include that. But some of the other ones, I like, you know, like, I read reviews, like, by, like, John or Ed or even Matt, who's also on the website now, Gut Munchers, but it's like, a lot of them are like slow burns, and I mean, I just don't think...
You don't like slow burns?
I just don't think that's my cup of tea. Like, I like to be a little bit more fast and furious than that.
Well, they're good. I mean, there's...
And like I said, I'm not saying every single one, because by no means I'm an expert.
Right,
I'm just saying,
an expert. You're talking about stuff you don't know.
But I'm just going to, you know, I prefaced that by saying, but what I've read and what I've seen on my own, and like, that's just like, I'm, you know, the thing is like, do I really want to spend my money on movies that I have no idea about? You know, when I go buy a slasher film, I got an idea what I'm going to get. With a giallo, I have no idea what I'm going to get. It could be maybe a masterpiece, like Deep Red supposedly is, and, you know, I have nothing but, you know, positive things I've heard about that. Or it could be some, you know, piece of crap, but, you know, somebody else, you know, really champions it, and I'm like, spend $15, and I'm like, what is this?
Well, Deep Red is the best giallo ever, so if you ever start, I know once I've seen that, nothing comes close to that movie as far as me. I mean, the funny thing is that giallo is supposed to have violence. Well, not necessarily violence was what I was going for. It's supposed to have really sleazy and nudity and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, Deep Red, I don't know, I think it has one shot of a boob, you know, but it's not really sexual. So.
Oh, that's a man on top of that.
No, it's not a man. But anyway.
Hi, guys.
But,
my name's Peter.
I mean, most of Argento's giallos really don't have that much sex in them. But the other ones.
Because he's having all the sex offset. He doesn't have to have it onset.
I don't know about all that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he did for a while, but then near the end, he was killing her off left and right in his movies. So.
Like, for so. Because she's some kind of weird, occult, weirdo, freaky person.
Hey, come on now.
Dario Micheletti, or whatever your last name is.
Funchetti. Well, she gave birth to two hot daughters.
Aja Argento and European Argento?
No, Flora. Actually, they had another daughter named Anna, and she died. I don't know. Because Aja's got the tattoo on her of her sister's name. She actually named her baby, her first baby, Anna, so.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, Aja's not a, she's a strange ranger anyway, so.
Yeah, I watched a documentary about her, and, she's more grungy. She'll dress up for a fashion suit. She just does it to get money to make movies of her own, and then, the rest of the time she spins around smoking and, looking like crap.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what to say about that, but anyway, but she does clean up rather good on, pictures I've seen, and,
all those posters you have hanging to your ceiling.
Well, I do have an autographed picture of her, supposedly, so I bought it off eBay like in 10 years ago.
Well, you could have still the one they have a lot of video of the poster.
Oh, I know.
Just walking out the door.
God. Yes, I was there today.
That's bad of eBay, right?
Yes, that's her first movie, and I've got that, or first directed movie, and it's pretty funny. She tries to rap. There's like Italian rap.
Oh, I've seen it.
And there's black guys that they're black Italians. I guess I don't understand that, but anyway.
Yeah, you haven't watched True Romance, dude? Come on, man. They talk all about that.
Oh, yeah, Sicilians. Yeah, that's what I was thinking as I was saying it. But I don't want Christopher Walken to kill me.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, because y'all like eggplants, okay?
Eggplants.
But yeah, I mean, you know, to get back to your point, it's like, you know. You know, that's just my personal thing. I mean, everybody has like a genre they really like champion or they're really into. And, you know, obviously you're a giallo and European fanatic and that's awesome, but I haven't seen enough to form an educated opinion. And I don't claim to like think like, oh, everything from Europe sucks or all giallo suck. It's just a personal thing where what I've seen, I haven't been impressed with. And I haven't want to spend my hard earned money on things that I have no idea about, like, you know, crapshoot. So. Eventually I'll probably get around to watching more and seeing if I enjoy it, but being that I've heard a lot of them are slow burns and all of the payoffs, you don't think they're not actually that great payoffs. So that makes me wonder, like, do I really want to invest time and money into something that I don't really find it to be entertaining?
And so you picked up any Japanese horror or anything like that over there?
No, not really. Like, cause it's kind of funny because on the same token that I was talking about European cinema and Italian cinema, I really have no interest in Asian cinema either.
Cinema.
So, like, cinema, fantastique. But, yeah, it's the same thing, like, you know, to watch, because I can't understand what's going on.
Okay, but, well, let me thank you for your another segment here, and I'll close it out.
I'll be back for the third segment, so I'll be ready.
That's going to be a long wait, but I'll be back after this. Yeah. like to thank Jason for his time, and I would continue with my list. My number fourth movie of my top five giallos is going to be Bird with Crystal Plumage. This is the first movie that Dario Argento directed, I believe, in 69. And, you know, even Alfred Hitchcock took note of it. So it's a really good movie. It has a great opening scene with these glass sliding doors. I mean, it has your male lead in a sense of he can't save this lady from this attack. I mean, it's just, you can't help her. I mean, it's just this great great opening, and there's a mystery, of course, to be solved, and I just can't say how great it is. And also, the Blue Underground Blu-ray is a definite improvement on the DVD. Even that, the DVD itself is a awesome entry. I had the old VCI DVD, which is fine. It had the out of print soundtrack on it, which is kind of cool. Then we got the Blu-ray, and I'm sorry, you got the Blue Underground version, and that was just definitely an improvement over the VCI. And then here we go again with another improvement. So, you know, if you've never seen this movie or you've never owned it, definitely get the Blu-ray if you have a high def TV and of course Blu-ray. But that's my top four pick. And the next segment, I want to be talking to John Shatner. He is part of the Gut Munchers website and podcast, and I do a little thing on there as well. And here we go.
So this is Steve, and I've got my first kind of interview thing going on, and I'm asking people about their favorite top five giallo. And I got John from Gut Munchers, and me and him also do a podcast called Gut Munchers. And John, thanks for taking some time with me, and we'll talk about some giallos.
Okay, sounds like a plan. And I'm glad to make my second appearance on Eurocult. I think the last time I was on, we were talking about Jason being in a bathroom.
Yeah, it was Wasteland. Yeah. Well, just a beginning question. I mean, do you recall any of your the first giallo you ever saw, and do you recall the title of it? Or
yeah, actually, the first giallo I ever saw would have been I would say it would have to have been one of the Argento ones, and I think it was probably the Bird with the Crystal Plumage. I'm fairly new to the giallos. It wasn't until I started hanging out with another friend of the site and show, and the guy you know, which is Ed Demko. Ed turned me on to a lot of the Italian stuff, and so I was kind of a late comer to the giallos. It's only been probably I did a lot of Italian stuff. I love the zombie movies and other things like that, and the westerns, spaghetti westerns. But yeah, I've probably been just a few years ago that I saw my first Argento movie, and I'm 99% sure it was Bird with Crystal Plumage.
Okay.
Pardon?
I was just going to say that's a really good one, and it's also one of the, you know, the first ones of that era, or, you know, that period. Yeah. That you don't have a lot of sex, but you do have some violence, but I wouldn't call it over-violent, and it's almost a combination or trans from a Hitchcock movie. Well, basically, that's what they kind of are, is an Italian Hitchcock movie. So that's a good place to start if you're it's like as far as sex and violence, that's kind of on the low end, and then you get to the sleaziest parts of it when you move up a little bit.
And it's funny you mention that, because do you want to go ahead and give you my top five?
Sure, just begin with your fifth one there,
My fifth one. The number five one, and it's funny you mentioned that it was kind of tame, or like it was switching over, because I actually became a huge fan of giallos and started going back. And I guess this is, a lot of people say this is a first, or one of the earlier giallos, and it's very tame. Mm-hmm. I think early 60s, and it's Mario Bava's The Girl That Knew Too Much.
Right.
And it's got John Saxon. And I really love this movie, and I got a chance to meet John Saxon. And actually, of all the things that I own that he was in, I had him sign my Baba box set that has The Girl That Knew Too Much.
Right.
And I really love this movie. It's about an American girl who shows up in Italy and gets embroiled in this murder mystery, basically meets this mysterious American expat, I think is what he was over there, expatriate, played by John Saxon. And it's really, it's a good mystery and a good movie. Not much sleaze, not much violence, or no sex, really, because it was, like I say, an early 60s movie. But dude, Baba knew how to make a film, and this is a great movie.
Yeah, I actually have the poster of that under, I guess the American title, I believe, was something like The Evil Eye or something, but yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that had a ton of different titles.
Yeah, I mean, it's a gorgeous black and white. There's a lot of,
camera work is beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. That's what's going to be camera work, shadows. So, yeah, it's a very early giallo, and like you were saying, I believe it is supposed to be one of the first, if not the first, filmed giallo.
Yeah.
So it's
I get away from that, and I jump both feet firmly planted in the sleaze, because the next one is one that I've recently got a chance to finally watch. I've heard about it. But it's got a really cool, like, sleazy core to the story.
I know what it is.
What?
Sister, Ursula's sister or something like that?
No, not sister. Nope. This is What Have They Done to Solange, or What Have You Done to Solange. It's both titles.
Right, with Camille Keaton's in that as well, right?
Camille Keaton plays Solange, and I don't think she has any lines. This is a really killer, sleazy little movie. It starts off with there's a guy working at a girl's school, and he's like basically, you think he's like, you know, making time with one of his students, which is obviously a big no-no, and he's out in a boat, and he's trying to get busy with her, and she sees what she thinks is a murder. And later on, he goes back after, like, she flips out and finds out there was a murder. And the way the people are killed in this movie, initially, you're just like, it is so nasty, god-awful. And you don't get to see a lot, but you get to see enough where you're just kind of like, wow, that's kind of over the top with the way the people are murdered. I don't want to give too much away, but it's a really sleazy, cool movie. And then once the big reveal at the end happens and you figure out, you know, what's going on with Solange and what's going on and the murders and everything makes sense, and it's just really awesome. I like it a lot.
Yeah, me too. I need to revisit that soon. Well, you're aware that there's actually that's part of a trilogy called Schoolgirls in Peril?
I didn't know that, no.
Yeah, they made another movie. The next movie of that is pretty similar. The title is What Have They Done to Our Daughters? And it's kind of a similar type of story. Unfortunately, I haven't seen it in a long time. I need to revisit that one. And there's also one, I think it's called Ring of Darkness or Ring of Fear. I believe the same person wrote each film. I'm not sure about the direction. But, I recently found that out through like a giallo scrapbook I found on the Internet. So definitely another good solid choice. And what's breaking your top three?
Really cool, sleazy little bent to it, and it's The Case of the Bloody Iris.
With Edwin Finch.
Yes. And this is another one where number three and number four, these two movies, these last two, I love when you finally see the killer's motivation is revealed. And the reason that number three is a little – the reason I put this one a little higher than What Have You Done to Solange or What Have They Done to Solange is that this movie, it's so twisted for what the reasoning behind the killer's motives are and why he goes about doing the killings. You're just kind of like, good God, you know, really, dude? Seriously, that's just twisted. And this also has The Case of the Bloody Iris also has a wonderful – and just completely goofy, twisted, over-the-top, red herring suspect in it that you're just kind of like, that's just it's just awesome. And again, another very sleazy, twisted little flick that I enjoy a lot.
Yeah, and it stars what I call the first couple of Eurocult movies, Edwin Finch and George Hilton.
Mm-hmm.
They're in like three. I don't know how many movies they're in together. This is when I got this. I got it on the original Jalos set from Anchor Bay, which of course now is out of print. But I think Blue Underground has released all the movies separately anyway. But that's the first time I ever seen Edwin Finch, and I mean, in this movie, she is like so freaking hot. It's amazing. So yep, that's another good choice. So what's your second top one?
This number two, and you know, we've here top five, the first three, none of them are Argento movies. My top two are Argento movies. And this number two spot could have gone either way. I had two different movies that I could have put in this spot, and I didn't want to put three Argento movies in my top five, even though all three of these are good enough to be in the top five. I ended up going with one that might shock a little bit of people, but I love the characters in it, and it's just recently come to DVD, and that's Four Flies on Grey Velvet.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of people don't like it as much as something like The Bird of the Crystal Plumage, mm-hmm. But for me, there's like a lot of the secondary characters in the story. Basically, it's about if you haven't seen it, it's about a guy who's like in a rock band, and he witnesses a murder, and he gets pulled into this entire twisted, weird sequence of events where he thinks he's killed somebody, it's not that he witnesses a murder. He thinks he killed somebody, and that somebody saw him, and they're blackmailing him, and it's just crazy. And then he's got all these like oddball characters around him, like the homeless guy and the guy that lives in the park, and like a random scene where they're like casket shopping. Mm-hmm. Or they're at the trade show anyway, and that's where they're just having it. And then, of course, dude, I've never seen a character in any giallo that I got such a kick out of like I did the detective in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's just because of these oddball characters. Because Argento takes a lot of heat for being a very visual guy, and his stories aren't that entertaining sometimes, or don't necessarily make great sense. And I just love this movie because of such... There's so many great characters, and they're so oddball that this really shows that he has the ability to make a movie with great characters. So that's why I chose this one for the number two spot.
Now, what really, I mean, I agree to an extent. I do like the movie, but I'm not a super big fan of it. Well, I guess one of the reasons I'm not is not really the film's fault. They released a documentary called Dario Argento, An Eye for Horror, and they basically gave away the ending to this movie on that. So that really was kind of crappy. I've bought this film like three times in the past on VHS, and you either get one that's blurry, but it's blurry, but it's clear, or you get one that's clear but grainy. And so finally, Maya Communications picked up the ball, and they did put out a great release of that movie.
Yeah.
And it's got Mitzi Farmer in it, I think that's her name. And she stars in another giallo. It was called Autopsy from like 76, which is a pretty good movie that I don't hear a lot of people talk about. But I guess I need a drum roll, but what's your top movie, top giallo?
Well, this is probably not at all a shock, but
yeah.
another Argento movie, and it's one of them which, again, dude, it's one of those things that I'm not even going to give away why this is so awesome.
Yeah.
The part in this that makes it so awesome, and it's Deep Red, yeah. Profondo Rosso. You know, when I first saw the movie, it was weird because I watched the movie the first time, and I'm like, it was pretty good, but I didn't see why everybody loved it so much. And then Ed said, hey, go back and watch it again, but pay attention in this particular scene, mm-hmm. and pay attention really close. And I'm like, okay. And I went back and watched the movie again, and then you go back, and without again giving everything away, you're just like, oh my God, that was brilliant. That was just freaking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's also got, his name just escaped me. The lead actor in this movie.
David Hemming.
David Hemming does a wonderful job in this movie. And it, you know, at this point, until something comes along and knock it off, this is probably my favorite giallo. But you know, I got to tell you, and then of course the one that didn't make it into the top five that easily could have been in the top five is the Bird of the Crystal Plumage,
mm-hmm.
Which I give an honorable mention to. I just like Four Flies a little bit better because of the characters, but that's another great movie. And this is a marvelous list. I could watch any of these movies again and again. And then, even though this wouldn't crack the top five because it's not as good, but there's another one that I think is awesome because of the way they have the setting and move things around. And have you ever seen Eyeball?
Yes.
Eyeball is like a weird little giallo, but I think it's Lindsay. Isn't it Lindsay?
Yeah, it's Alberto Lindsay.
Yeah, so that was unexpected from him. And then Fulci also did... Don't Torture a Duckling,
yes.
Which I think is another good one, but mm-hmm. they just weren't good enough to crack top five.
Right. Yeah, I mean, my experience with Deep Red, it's been a long time. I saw it actually on television really late at night, and for the most part, as far as it was the American cut, and mm-hmm. it wasn't much cut out of it, and, I'm like maybe 13 or something, and it's like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm watching this guy get drugged by a dump truck, and his head is hitting the sidewalk from,
mm-hmm.
and that's this is freaking awesome.
Yeah.
So I mean, and of course, I didn't know who Argento was when I was 13, and then of course later on, you get the crappy public domain versions until I believe 99, and when you get this fabulous restored version of the DVD, which I mean, it's just like an enforced widescreen. It's just like seeing the movie for the first time. Mm-hmm. I mean, most Italian movies and then some foreign movies in general, they're dubbed. And with Italian movies, everything is exaggerated to an extent. So it's almost hyper-reality, or realistic, I guess would be a word. It just grabs you more than a regular type of movie like that. I mean, if an American made Deep Red, first we wouldn't have the Goblin soundtrack. We wouldn't have all the eccentric Italian character actors that are, there. And, I mean, I'm sure they wouldn't let somebody stick a freaking pin through a lizard. I mean, all kinds of little touches and craziness that just make that movie, it'd be hard-bent to find anyone who doesn't like, horror movies in general that wouldn't think that was a good movie. Of course, probably teeny boppers would think it was boring, but it is... I won't say it's my... I'll have to leave some mystery, but it's on my list. But we'll, but yeah, it's definitely one of the best giallos of all time.
And it's, I think it's you hit something nail on the head with giallos. Is a lot of people don't. I mean, giallos. I always tell people, I'm like, I love these movies, but if you sat there and told me that you think giallos are stupid and you hated them, I couldn't argue with you. And because I don't agree, but they can be an acquired taste because I think they have they're uniquely European, and specifically, I think, Italian, but there are some giallos that I think have been made by non-Italians that are pretty good, a few here and there. But they do have a unique pacing and vibe and feel. And of course, then Argentos have a unique look and sound to them because Argento didn't do a lot of the traditional – most giallos have kind of this really kind of cool Euro sleaze kind of soundtrack to him, and Argento's, like, Deep Red has this wonderful score by Goblin.
Right.
And, of course, his movies are just very visual and beautiful. But as a matter of just bottom line for giallos, basically, they do have their own unique kind of slow pace. But I love them because they have the slow burn, and you just keep watching them and seeing what's coming.
Yeah, I mean, there's... Honestly, as far as there's different types of directors who do giallos, and I mean, for me, Argento's giallos stand above everybody else's, and then of course everybody else's has that extra touch of sleaze that provides the missing part or a different part of the experience that makes it makes it just this enjoyable. You know, I was mentioning Sister of Ursula. That's a pretty sleazy one that recently came out.
Yeah.
And I mean, especially the weapon of choice in the stuff like that. Strip Nude for Your Killer is a good sleazy one.
That's a good one. I like that one.
And then Torso, which is another one, a favorite of mine. It's got a lot of sleaze in it, you know. And they're just, I don't know. Of course, that translated to America in some ways with the, Brian De Palma's Dress to Kill, to me, is almost like a giallo to an extent.
An American version of one, I can totally see that, dude. I mean, I can totally see that.
Yeah, with the music is very loud in that music, or you know, it's not in the background, it's pretty much up front, and that carries the story. I mean, there's a scene at the beginning where I believe there was no even dialogue with Angie Dickinson. She's meeting the guy, and the music is the dialogue for those scenes, and it you know, tells the drama and the emotions of the scenes and stuff like that. So, you know, and then later on, of course, it got Americanized, and then all these crappy erotic thrillers. Even Basic Instinct, to an extent, has those themes in it. This lacks some of the over-the-top stylized stuff that the Italians did.
Well, and I also think to some extent, and a lot of, I mean, because, you know, some people, and I don't necessarily consider it a giallo, but it could kind of be a giallo. Something like Bay of Blood, which has the mystery and the killer. In a lot of ways, giallo is also some of the sleaze and some of the killings and the violence, especially the Argento ones, I think, went partway to inspire the slasher craze of the 80s.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean,
yeah,
absolutely. They just took out. They just stripped it down and just used a common denominator, and
let's be honest. I don't want to sound arrogant, because I love slasher movies, but in a lot of ways, they dumbed down the formula for the American audience.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely. I mean, in most of these movies, if you take out like the bigger movies, or you know, even Friday the 13th is a mystery: who's killing these people, and then you get a resolution at the end. So, I mean, honestly, you know. In a way, that's a typical, if I translated that into Rome or something, we could have a giallo there.
Exactly.
So, I mean, yeah, it is just Americanized version, and then, you know, everything comes and goes. I don't believe the last giallos that were, you know, Argento made, the last giallo he made before this new movie that's coming out was Sleepless, which... you know, is a pretty good giallo. It's got some twists in it, but as far as the dubbing, the music, goblins in it, not by his choice, but by the producers or whoever owned the film, you know, it captured some of that, especially the violence. I would have to say that's his sleaziest movie up. I mean, I'm not sure. I think Mother of Tears is on the same level or a little bit more sleazy than that. But as far as nudity and everything else, that was probably his sleaziest giallo movie to date.
Cool. Cool.
So, well, I mean, we've taken up about 20 some minutes of time. So, John, thanks a lot for talking with us, and I'm sure we'll meet up and talk real soon.
Yep. And thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you very much.
See ya.
See, hold on, I'll be back with some more stuff. John, for your time and your list. And also, sorry about the audio quality. It was the first time I used that recording software, and it didn't. It worked out for the other guys, as far as I can remember. But I don't know. But anyway, that leads us to the third giallo on my list, and that's going to be Don't Torture a Duckling. I just find this movie haunting. It's a Fulci movie, and it kind of makes some sense a little bit. So it's, and also the cinematography is just crazy, as far as it's very stark looking in the beginning, and then of course in these villages in Italy, everything's so rich and stuff like that. This is a very kind of a stranger, mean-spirited movie, as far as the victims are not like ladies and stuff. They're like little boys. So, you know, that's a a completely different kind of thing going on there. But, I mean, you got George Milan's in it. Tom Milan, sorry. And one of the queens of these type of movies and Euro movies in general, Barbara Boucher. First time I seen her, and oh my God, how beautiful is that woman? It's amazing. But I really enjoyed that movie. Got it on a blind buy back in the early days from Anchor Bay, and I was really, really happy with it. It's gotten better over repeat viewing for sure. The next one is The Sultan of Sleaze, Ed Demko. And, I think me and him could talk about all kinds of different stuff all day long. Same with John. I just talked to John today, and we talked for a good half an hour, 45 minutes over, I can't even, just random stuff about movies and $6 Million Man and stuff like that. It's kind of funny. So, here's me and Ed discussing his list, and it sounds like it was pretty hard for him to come up with his list. So, here we go. I got Ed on the line, and he's going to talk about his list of favorite five giallos. Ed?
Yes. Okay.
What's going on?
Not too much, man. This was literally, like, really hard for me. I didn't realize that it would be this hard, but it was. And also, I should have sort of a disclaimer, I guess, before I start my list. There's a lot of movies that I think a lot of people would consider to be giallos that I might not necessarily consider giallo.
Right.
And a prime example to that one's like Twitch of the Death Nerve.
Right.
Absolutely love that movie, but to me, it's a body count movie. It's not a giallo movie, and there is a bit of a difference there.
Yeah.
So that's not on my list. And it was hard for me to come to that decision, but that's the easiest way for me to do this list, really. Right.
Okay. So what's your fifth one?
Okay, the fifth one is from a director that's going to be on this list a couple times here, Dario Argento.
Wow.
And the movie I picked was The Bird with the Crystal Plumage. I love this movie. And the reason why, too, is because it's not really sleazy or anything. It kind of is the basic definition to me of what a giallo is. It's a total mystery. There's a lot of style in it. And very few people, to me, can shoot a giallo movie like Dario Argento can. And I've loved this movie since I first seen it. And there's a great Blue Underground DVD of it. It's like cleaned up. It looks awesome. And I really, really like the movie. It's a great flick.
Yeah, I agree. I had the old VCI disc. It had the soundtrack on it as well. Mm-hmm. Before I got that, and I was lucky enough to get the Blu-ray, and it is a slight improvement over just the DVD.
Yeah.
The movie itself, like you say, is a complete mystery. The very first couple of minutes, that first scene where he gets trapped between the glass doors and sees this supposed murder, that mm-hmm. really sets the, I mean, that's a very genius kind of setup, and I know Alfred Hitchcock was, impressed with that. I think he gave a statement. He has to watch this boy, this Italian boy, or something like that. So if you can impress him, then you're in good company.
Yeah, and I agree with you completely about that scene, too. And it's so cool to me, and it's kind of like why I like the giallo movie in general, is because it kind of takes the natural themes of horror. Like, how many horror movies have you seen where somebody's, like, trapped in, like, a dungeon? Or, all kinds of different places, but in this one, it's actually glass that's trapping them. And I just think that's a really cool technique, and it's a wonderfully shot scene. It looks amazing. It's like really cool the way that he does everything with the camera and everything, and it really sets up the movie well. And you don't see a lot of movies kind of suck you into the storyline that quick, and that's something I really like about the movie too.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely on my list as well. I know John had it on his number 5, I believe, as well, so.
Go figure.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, it's hard to make a Giallo best of without Argento. It'd be a hard, it'd be a very hard list to come up with.
Yeah, I would totally agree, and I think I'll expand on that a little bit later, but yeah I completely agree with you. It's the guy's really a master at making the Giallo. I mean, that's kind of his bread and butter.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's on your fourth spot there?
Okay, the fourth one, there's a major reason why I had to put this one on here. A lot of people might skip this one. I can't. I was really impressed with it the first time I saw it. I think it's very well acted, and it's made by a master of horror cinema, and it's also the first of its kind. And that one is The Girl Who Knew Too Much from Mario Bava.
Right.
I love the movie. I think it's really good. John Saxon is amazing in it. But the thing that kind of sets this one apart for me is just how much of the exterior shots that there are, like in Italy. Like, it's a really unique landscape where they're shooting the movie, and they really take advantage of it. And I thought that was really cool, too.
Yeah, I mean, I like the movie a lot. I actually have the poster from the original 64 poster.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I wanted to get it signed, but I don't know, I got cheap. but, yeah, I mean, I like the movie a lot, too. And there's one scene in there. Of course, it's in black and white. I forgot near the end where they're going through a bunch of rooms and there's blackness.
Yes.
And it's pretty, I mean, and also, you know, I guess to backtrack to Bird with Crystal Plumage, there's a great scene in there as well that has him going through of dark passages with just his silhouette or just, you know, him in a shadow. So, I mean, both these movies have this kind of use of shadows and stuff, and then of course the black and white really is very striking.
Yeah, and you know what too? It's kind of unique the way that the movie's made, because if there's two genres of horror film that are completely different from each other, it's the giallo and like your typical gothic horror film. And I think that Bava was so good at doing the gothic horror film, and when you see his version of a black and white giallo, it kind of brings a little bit of that gothic look to it.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, with the shadowing and stuff, and I thought that was really cool, and it's something too that you didn't get to see a lot, because from that point forward, most movies were being made in color.
Right.
So it's kind of cool to see a giallo in black and white.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much considered the first giallo on film.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So what's breaking the top three?
Top three. This is kind of where I was having a hard time. The two and three spots for me were really difficult. But the third choice that I picked, and you know me, okay, I love my exploitation movies, I love my sleaze, and there's very few giallos as sleazy as this one, and it's Sergio Martino's Torso.
Yes.
I love Torso. It's such a wicked, mean little movie, man, and it works. I mean, it's fucking fantastic. I really, really like Torso. It's, some people kind of rag on it a little bit because it's not a conventional giallo,
but I mean,
very few movies, or at least giallo films, you know, a lot of times they just focus on the black gloves.
Right.
This one kind of expands on that and gives the killer like a unique look, and it's really, really awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my favorite part, or one of my favorite parts, is when the Ascot salesman gets killed.
Yeah.
There's a whole subplot about ascots, which it even made me learn the word ascot. So, I mean, it's, and very, there's a very hot ladies in this.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm very enamored of, I can't pronounce her last name, but it's Tina Mulet or something, or?
Yeah, I think that's how I would say it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I find she's hotter than hell in this, and you know, I think Mitzi Farmer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and yeah. Then they got the black chick. There must have been only one black chick working in Italian movies back then, because she's in everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's See, the thing is, too, that I like about this movie is, like, if you see the cover to the movie, or if you see poster stuff for it, there's the killer, and there's a very clear version of, like, a hacksaw, or,
right.
like, this saw, okay? And you're watching the movie, and it's going through the motions, and you're like, dude, where the fuck is this saw at? And I tell you what, though, when they finally break it out, it's, like, a great, super, super tense scene, and it's totally worth the wait. You know what I mean? Because it could have been a disaster kind of waiting for that, and then it sucks. But, like, Martino did a really good job with it, and I really like it. And this is another one, too, where I really like the atmosphere that the movie has.
Right, I mean, I just love the location they filmed it on. House or mansion is up on a hill.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just the village below. I love all that stuff. I really would like to go to Italy just to visit some of those sites, and I just dig all that old country stuff.
Yeah, I like it a lot, too. And another thing that I really like about this movie that's kind of cool is basically, and this might be a mild spoiler just to warn people, but, like, stuff's going on, and this group of girls decides that they need to get away, and they go to the mansion that you were just talking about. And you know how in a lot of movies they put, like, people in the middle of the woods to basically establish that they're away from society and, like, they're screwed, like there's no help there? Right. This movie, this is why I kind of like it, and it's kind of twisted and wicked sense of humor, is it puts them in this place where they're sort of cut off, but not completely, but there's all these reasons why they can't really get out to get help. Mm-hmm. Like, it covers its bases pretty well, and I think it's a pretty smart flick, too. And that's kind of surprising, but, I mean, because I don't know how much other Sergio Martino stuff you've ever seen. I mean, like, if you, it's hard to believe that this guy is the same guy that made Mountain of the Cannibal God. Because it's really smart. It's a really good movie, and Mountain of the Cannibal God's just, like, basically a stupid cannibal movie. Yeah. I like it, but it's not smart at all.
Yeah, I mean, there's a, especially near the, I'm trying to remember exactly because it's been a little bit, where they're kind of smoking dope and one of the girls leaves and the killer is chasing her.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I mean, it's just the look of that is very, you know, very surreal compared to the rest of the movie. So I like that. I mean, it's just a great movie. It's a lot of, I mean, I know it's kind of brutal, but still, I enjoy it, so.
Yeah, it especially, too, if you've kind of, like, this wasn't one of the first genres I've ever seen, okay?
Right.
And I remember when I was kind of going through the motions and watching a lot of them, you know, you have a lot of the Black Glove Killer, a lot of style and stuff like that. So if you haven't seen Torso and you've seen a bunch of other giallo movies, kind of like make sure you see it because it's definitely different from the rest of them. So, like, if you're kind of getting sick of the same storylines kind of over and over again, this one's a nice little change of pace, I thought, too. So that's another reason why I like it. It's a lot different than the other ones are, too.
Right. I mean, I can't say much more. I really enjoy that movie a lot. So what's your second one there?
Okay, this one was really hard because I almost left it off the list completely. So I was, like, looking through a lot of stuff and trying to figure out if there's anything I was missing, and I remembered this one. I love this movie. Once again, it's the second appearance on the on the list by Mario Bava, and it's Blood and Black Lace.
Right.
This movie is why I really love Bava, because he's always, I mean, stylistically and everything, Bava's awesome. You know what I mean? I love that about him. But in this movie, it's like the killer in this movie is such a bastard. The guy is mean, and I mean mean. There's chicks getting slashed up left and right in this movie, and there's some nice gore in it. And on top of that, it's a movie that was made in 1964,
right,
which was kind of just on the cusp of, like, the H.G. Lewis gore films and stuff, so you didn't really see a lot of that. And on top of it, it's like the cherry on top, Cameron Mitchell's in it.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. He plays Max Marion.
Yeah, I mean, there's... You know, I got the big on DVD. It came out. They had a set called the Bava box set or something, like in the early 2000s or 99, and it had this movie in it as well. And this was the first time I ever saw it. And yeah, it's got some crazy death scenes. I mean, I remember the drowning and also the someone's face getting burnt on so I mean, and it you know, of course, all the fashion crap I could do without, but you know, I guess it lends to the stylized stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely one of the earlier and better Jallos out there, and it, you know, and it, of course, it's more restrained on the sleeves part of it than the later ones, especially in the 70s.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and it's kind of like, you know, I always look at it like this: is like Dario Argento perfected the Giallo formula, but Mario Bava's the one that set the standard to begin with.
Mm.
You know, and it's kind of weird to me too, because I see such a correlation between the two filmmakers, and it's kind of like Bava did all this stuff and Argento made his movies, but it's kind of like Argento wouldn't have existed without the way Bava was doing stuff. And I'm not saying that Argento was ripping him off. He just kind of like took what Bava had already built and expanded on it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Blood and Black Lace is like the perfect example of like a film that if you watch it and you've seen Argento's stuff, you're going to kind of see where he gets a lot of his camera movements from and a lot of the style and color. Because that's another thing about Blood and Black Lace, too, that's really cool, is there's a lot of vibrant color in the movie, too.
Right.
And it's like a kind of like a moving painting. You know, a lot of people say that about Suspiria and stuff, but I see Blood and Black Lace is almost the same way.
Right. I mean, that's one thing that's been lost is the Technicolor and all that kind of processing and film stock that they use for Suspiria and, you know, but the older movies from the 60s had that, you know, rich texture look. And then when we moved over to the 70s, they kind of went a little bit more towards a realistic, and it kind of got, like, really grainy looking to me.
Yeah, and you know what else is really weird, too, if you think about it? And I just kind of had this thought popping in my head when we were talking about it, but it's kind of like if you think about the clothing of the 60s, it's like bright colors and, like, you know what I mean? Like a lot of wild stuff. And once you go into the 70s, that's kind of like where, like, browns and, like the drab colors were kind of coming back into it.
Right.
So it's really weird that the film kind of reflects that. You know what I mean? It seems like, except for something like Suspiria, which is completely on its own platform, and it's not a giallo, you know?
Right.
It's really unique to kind of see the color platforms and films change like that, because it seems like in the 60s in Italy, if you went to a movie and it was in color, there was a hell of a lot of color in it. Mm-hmm. You know, even non-horror movies, too, you know what I mean? So it's kind of weird to see how, you know, the times change with, like, clothing and stuff like that, and it kind of bled into the film of it, too.
Right. Now, I'm pretty sure I know what your number one is.
Yeah.
So... It's hard to top this one. So go ahead. Let me make sure I know.
Okay.
What's...
All right, here we go. This is easily my favorite giallo of all time. It's a movie that I think is shot brilliantly. The story's fascinating, and it is completely creepy too, which is something that a lot of these movies don't have. And it is from Dario Argento, and the film is Deep Red.
Right.
Love the movie. It's really one of my favorite horror films of all time. I think it's brilliant in just about every way. I think it's virtually flawless. And I think it is the film that totally set the standard for the giallo. It has a great mystery to it. It has some stuff in it which I really like. And I don't want to spoil this for anybody that hasn't seen it, but I want to tell you this. If you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, in the beginning there's a murder that happens. And a guy is going to investigate it. He's going to look and see what happened. And he's walking down a hallway of mirrors. All I'm going to say is pay attention.
Right.
That's all I will pay attention. Because if you do, and you see what you're supposed to see, it actually makes the movie a lot better.
Yeah. Now, this is my first giallo I ever saw. And it was actually on TV. And pretty much... as far as I could tell, it was uncut, and this is like in like 84,
okay.
85, and of course, you know, I was all up in it, because back when I was a kid, I was really into mystery movies and reading mysteries and stuff like this, and this is kind of a progression of that, and so, I mean, yeah, it's awesome, and then, of course, in 99, when the new DVD came out, it's just like seeing the movie for the first time.
Yeah.
I mean, if you watch this movie, you're going to be... and you try to watch any other giallos, it's going to be kind of a hard thing to live up to, because there's just this movie doesn't really have everything perfect. I mean, other movies have hotter chicks, a little sleaze, a little nudity, which, you know, makes them enjoyable in their own right, but still, yeah. This movie is the top of the food chain as far as, in my concern. There's never been anything that's as good as this movie. The music is awesome. David Hemming is awesome. I mean, it's just the mystery, like you say, is plausible, at least into its conclusions. And, I don't know what else to say, but other than it's one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah, it really does hit every mark. I mean, that's what's really cool about it. It's like, if you had a Giallo checklist, let's say, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, you have a cool stylistic murders, check. You have a really, really cool mystery, check. You have some great music, check. You know, you have a really, that's another thing, too, that's awesome about it, is David Hemmings playing the main character.
Right.
David Hemmings is a great actor. And whenever you throw that great actor into this type of film, it kind of makes the mystery even better because you're really sucked into his character and you're kind of following him around and seeing all the stuff that he's doing. And the great thing about this movie is, I like to do this with mystery stuff too. I don't know if you're the same way, but when you watch it, you're trying to figure it out too.
Right.
And this movie's throwing you curveball after curveball after curveball. And I swear to God, if somebody told me that they watched this movie and it's like, oh, I knew who did it from the beginning, I'm calling bullshit on it. I don't believe it. There's no way.
Yeah. I used to, with other movies, I would watch them and then write down a piece of paper and kind of make an outline of trying to figure out who the person was.
Yeah.
And, of course, I mean, most of these movies, they're dubbed, of course. Mm-hmm. And I've always found this with these type of movies, it adds kind of a more surreal kind of element to the movies, you know. So, I mean, that's another little part of these foreign movies, Giallos in particular, that mm-hmm. have that, you know, just a little bit of surrealness to them because of all the dubbing and stuff.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I would completely... agree with that. It just, it kind of makes it otherworldly, almost.
Right.
And you know what, plus two, anytime, you've heard people say this before, when they watch a horror movie and they tell you it feels like a dream, there's two movies to me that are the perfect example of that, and it's Deep Red and Suspiria.
Mm-hmm.
They really come off like you're in some kind of like trippy, mind-altered dream. And you never know what's going to happen. See, that's another thing that's great about Argento is, a lot of people that don't like giallos kind of say over and over again that they're boring. Okay? And it's like Argento kind of acknowledges that. And what he does is kind of like you're watching a movie and the story's unfolding and it's like right when you might think to yourself, this is a little bit slow, it's like boom, nasty, ugly, violent murder.
Right.
And it like kind of wakes you up again. Or he'll manipulate you with the use of music, too, which is really, it's the mark of a great filmmaker. I mean, the guy really had every technical aspect of the film covered, and that's really, to me, what makes Deep Red the quintessential giallo film.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got a few other questions for you.
Sure.
The one I was really pondering was, who do you think is the hottest Euro sleazy or Euro cult movie actress?
Jesus, this is something, like I told you before we started this, how long it took me to do the list. I would have probably needed more time to do this one.
Yeah, okay.
I'm just joking, really, because there's just mainly a lot of hot chicks in these movies.
Yeah.
But if I had to really narrow it down to one, if you've ever seen Don't Torture a Duckling from Fulci...
Yes. Yes.
There's a scene in it with Barbara Brochet.
Yes.
And it's, like, literally eye-popping for real. Like, and it involves sunbathing, and it's just, it's really one of the greatest scenes ever put on any type of film ever.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to go with her, Barbara Brochet.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
I mean, of course, and then also in Rico the Mean Machine, she does a strip tease.
Which is... really the reason why I keep that movie in my collection.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the movie's okay, but, you know,
right.
That's the real reason to see the movie, believe me.
Yeah. Yeah, you have Edwin Finch, which is another incredibly hot chick.
Mm-hmm.
And, Rosa Neary from like Slaughter Hotel and some other stuff. She is incredibly hot. And I watched a movie with her and Edwin Finch called Seducers, and they're both naked in this movie, like left and right. It's incredible. And there is another version that was they filmed a lot of nude scenes, and then they filmed one that was clothed. And the one, of course, with the nude scenes is the very grainy one. But it's a lot. There's one scene where Edwin Finch is getting licked in a private area by a goat. And she really enjoys it.
And I'm angry immediately because I haven't seen this movie.
So yeah, it's just crazy. It's a crazy movie. She's hotter than hell, and she plays a nympho in Slaughter Hotel, which is like incredible because she wants to just have sex with just anybody, and her body is just, oh my god. So,
you know what, too? I guess I have to make something official here, though. If we're talking really Euro sleaze, okay? I mean, I'm not disagreeing with any of the people that we've named, but you really can't talk about Euro sleaze women and not mention Laura Gemser at least once.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, come on, she really is like the queen of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I got to throw a mention out for her. And another kind of a dark horse, somebody that I've always kind of liked, is Florinda Buchan.
Right.
From Don't Torture a Duckling, and she's in a ton of stuff. But Bad Inclination, she's into. It's another movie. But, like, you know, let's be honest, man, that's really what a lot of these movies are about. You know
right.
what I mean? It's sure, you have the murders and the style and the mystery, but, hey, a lot of them are basically to put really good-looking chicks on display, too, and that's never a bad thing.
Now, what do you consider the most sleazy giallo movie you've seen?
Oh, man, the most sleazy giallo.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Well, mine is Strip Nude for Your Killer, because there's, like, a whole bunch of nudity, and there's one scene where this chick has to be, I forgot if she's on top of him or below with this big fat guy and his big shorts on. It's just something that's very sleazy about that to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. That's one of the first ones that would come to my mind, I would say.
Yeah.
I guess depending on how you really think about it, Don't Torture a Duckling is pretty damn sleazy.
Yeah, it's sleazy as well. The subject matter is kind of like incredibly...
it's ahead of its time, too. I mean,
yeah.
There's basically scenes in the movie where Barbara Boucher is trying to seduce a 10-year-old?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So, I mean, I guess it just depends on your level of sleaze, but, I mean, those are two pretty good choices, I think.
Right, yeah, those are both good sleazy ones. I forgot, there's one I had to take a shower, or felt like I needed to take a shower. I can't recall it, but anyway, it was pretty sleazy. There's a few other ones that I, you know, there's some giallos I need to watch. Like, there's one called Giallo Venice or something. Of course, that was late. That was like 79 when that was released.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some other ones. I mean, I've seen most, but, you know, of course, that's the thing is there's a lot of them out there. And then you hear about the title, and of course the titles have been, you know, you throw in an animal or you throw in a knife or something in the title.
Yep.
You know, they kind of even got a giallo name generator thing that I used to play around with. So, you know, you hear about these movies either on the internet or in some books or something, and you go seek them out. And if you do find them, you know, the quality of them is probably not good, and they probably have Greek subtitles or something crazy, and then they're probably not as good as you would hope. So, I mean, is there any giallos that you've heard about that you haven't seen that you think is worth a crap? Or,
I mean, there's... See, a lot of them have to do with availability, too.
Right.
There's one that that's pretty damn good. I believe it's Umberto Lenzi, and it's called Eyeball.
Yes.
But it's pretty hard to find, though. You know what I mean? Right. You have to either download torrents or maybe you'll find a bootleg.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot... There's actually... And it's kind of weird, too, because, you know, the horror fans and stuff always talk about a lot of movies that have yet to make it to DVD. And as far as the giallos go, they really haven't put out the majority. They've put out, you know, the ones by the major filmmakers and the ones that kind of have a unique reputation to them, like Torso and stuff like that. But a lot of the odd-titled ones have yet to be released. And, I mean, I guess that, you know, it makes sense because a lot of these films were not made with American audiences in mind and probably wouldn't play too well to an American audience anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But another thing, too, that I find, like how you were talking about how, like, a lot of these films that you seek out and you find they're not that great, there's usually one reason to pick them up. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
The movie might suck, but there's a killer, you know, death scene, or there's some stuff with some hot chicks, or there's some funny stuff, or there's, like, one scene with some undeniable style to it, and, like, the rest of the movie falls to shit, you know? but yeah, it's a really difficult genre to kind of pin down, because there is a lot of it out there, and it was only made for a certain period of time, and it's not really, you know, done anymore.
Right. I mean, I believe the last one that was, you know, I consider worthy is, you know, Argento's Sleepless, mm-hmm. I believe 2001. I did get to see his new movie called Giallo, and it's not 100%. I mean, it's really got to do more with the color yellow than actually a giallo movie.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I want to see it, but I've heard some really bad things about it. So, I mean,
yeah.
I've heard a lot of really bad things about Mother of Tears and stuff before I've seen it, too, and I really enjoyed that one. So,
yeah, I mean,
I'd give it a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to say that, you know, I'm not a big fan of his latest effort, but yeah, I agree that Mother of Tears was a lot. I didn't consider it a great movie, but it's a fun movie. It's a throwback to the kind of demons kind of style from the mid '80s or late '80s. So,
and
know.
I'm one of the few people that'll say this too. I usually get in a lot of arguments with people about it, but I find it to be incredibly more tolerable and enjoyable than Inferno. I fucking hate Inferno. I think it's a goddamn mess of a film. I mean, yeah, it looks pretty, but put it this way. Inferno to me is like the equivalent of a female mannequin. It's like, yeah, it looks pretty, but it really doesn't do anything. You know?
Yeah, it took me a while. I mean, I hated Inferno when I first saw it, but, you know, I have to say that I kind of like it. I mean, of course, it's not going to be something I pull out on a monthly basis, maybe once a year. And, you know, if I don't pay attention to it, I might be surfing on the internet, but it's still on. So, you know, it's not like it's, your brain doesn't need to be paying full attention to the movie to enjoy it. And of course the music is awesome by, whatever his name is, Keith Emerson or something. But, thanks a lot for, sharing your list with us, Ed, and, thank you a lot.
Absolutely, man. Anytime. I appreciate it. And, you know, keep listening to your occult, people.
Thank you, sir.
Absolutely.
We'll be back. Hold on. Thanks, man. Voice is kind of a hypnotizing, isn't it? Just a little bit. That leads us to number two, which I think me and Ed talked about this a lot. It's a nice, sleazy giallo, and I really, really like it. It's grown on me, and it's moved its way up the list to number two, and it's Torso. I mean, you got so many beautiful ladies in this. You got that black chick that's in every movie. in Euro cult movies. I mean, I've seen her. I think she was also in like Case of the Bloody Iris. She was. I think she was also in Perversion Story. But this chick got around. She. As a wonder, she wasn't the chick, the bald chick in House on the Edge of the Park. But anyway, Tina Amont is in this, and she. She did a few other movies, I think one called Lifespan, which I need to see, but man, is she, I think, I find her very, very hot. You got Susie Kendall, I think, or Missy, yeah, I think Missy Farmer, Susie Kendall, I can't remember, I think Susie Kendall, but she's alright. She doesn't get naked, I don't think. The other, she did Lesbians, with the black chick and the redhead get naked, and that's nice. But, I mean, these are all college girls, supposedly, and, they're going to spend a holiday or something at this nice chateau or mansion up on this hill, and the town is right below them. And man, it's just incredible scenery. And there's a murderer going around killing peeps from the very first frame of the movie. And there's a subplot about ascots, which I always find humorous. But I think Sergio Leone or I don't know. I can't remember. Some directors I can remember, some I can't. But anyway, great movie. I don't know if the Blu-ray Underground is better than the Anchor Bay. But, you know, if they do come up with a Blu-ray, hopefully it'll be a greater, better transfer, and I'll definitely upgrade for this one. So, that's awesome. And this leads us to another spirited conversation with the Dead Pit guys, CK and Uncle Bill, going on and on. And we talk, actually we talked one before this with just me and CK, and then Uncle Bill got on the phone, and we took it from there. It was fun. I always like talking to those guys, and hope you enjoy this kind of, I don't know what you call it, a crazy conversation, I would assume. And then followed by that, I'll come back, and then we'll go over my number one pick, which I guess is not too much of a cliffhanger. But anyway, here we are talking about Jallows. Continue with more Jallow talk. I got some great guests here. I got the Uncle Bill and the Creepy Kentuckian, if you will.
That's right. You better
buy it.
You better bow down before us. We are the innovators of Horror Talk Radio, and all others are just gay.
That's right.
Yeah. Nobody. Keep in mind, nobody else is ever worth shit except us. That's our motto.
That's right. We invented breathing at Dead Pit.
Well, that's. We'll have to leave that to a debate.
Aside, now the only thing that we didn't invent was faggot. Was yeah. Can you hear me? Is Uncle Bill still there?
I'm still here.
The only thing that we didn't invent was faggotry. Now that, our good buddy Jason Payne can take credit for inventing that.
Oh, God. You're going to get in trouble now.
I don't care. I think Steve's, throughout the, we were recording some of this earlier, Steve's had problems with his microphone.
Okay.
Going in and out. So, he's probably fixing that right now.
Hey, Steve.
Hi, Steven.
I'm back.
Welcome back, Steve.
Thank you.
So.
Well, Steve, this is not very professional, sir.
I'm sorry, my internet's been a biatch.
That's okay. I know how it is with Sudden Link down here in Prestonsburg.
Yeah. So, you guys, I was talking to CK about just your first introduction to Jallows, whether you knew the term or not. Uncle Bill, what was your first introduction to Jallows?
I'm going to say probably Deep Red. I mean, that's probably the most famous giallo I can think of. I mean, I saw a lot of Argento. first one you'd actually classify as a giallo, and probably still the one of the best ones to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what I was saying though is like the odd thing as far as giallos go is I didn't even know the term until the DVDs hit. You know, Anchor Bay come out with all the Italian stuff on DVD in 99, 2000, something like that. So it was almost like a genre I didn't even know exists. But, you know, stuff that I remember watching early on would definitely be, you know, Deep Red, and I would say, what else? What's some other ones? New York Ripper.
Well, I mean, yeah, New York Ripper is, that's something I guarantee we won't agree on, but it definitely does qualify to be a giallo. And then I think that a lot of the ones that I really remember, though, I saw later on, because a lot of them didn't come out until later on, like when DVD progressed.
Yeah.
Blue Underground picked up a bunch of them, like Bird with the Crystal Plumage and stuff like that. Anchor Bay picked up Tenebra, or however you fucking pronounce it. I never can figure that out. And just recently, I think Blue Underground picked up another one, too, which was Torso, which is one that I really, really like.
Yeah. Yeah, Torso is one that I don't think I've seen that. Maybe I have. I don't remember seeing it, but same guy that did Mountain of the Cannibal God, so it couldn't be that bad. I mean, come on.
It's got to be one of the most perverted fucking jellos that I've ever seen. It's like really, really nasty, and just the way that the guy carries out the kills in it too, and the amount of nudity and sleaziness in the film is great, especially for people that like exploitation as well as giallo.
Indeed.
Yeah. I mean, they did begin as more of a... They were lurid to begin with, but as the 70s went on, they got more explicit with violence and nudity as well. Torso is one of my favorites as well. I mean, if you could pick your favorite giallo, if we leave out some of the major three characters, like Argento, Bava, and Fulci, what would you choose there?
Oh, shit. If you leave out Argento, Bava, and Fulci, then I don't even think I know that many giallos. I mean, that's basically...
Well, one that I think would fit in rather well would be Michael Soavi's Stage Fright, which I know Uncle Bill's a big fan of that one as well. And that's more like a, you know, you're talking about the movies that got more violent and bloody as time goes on. I think this one was out in 88,
mm-hmm.
And definitely one of the gorier, maybe the goriest giallo movie would be Stage Fright.
I can tell you one that I really, now that I've had a little bit of time to think about it, that I actually watched, and I think Blue Underground's responsible for this one. It was directed by a guy named Paolo Cavara, I think, and it's called Black Belly of the Tarantula. I don't know if you've seen that one, Steve.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that one. I mean, I think the selling point of that movie is the Barbara Boucher massage at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. Anything with her in it, I'll pretty much watch. I mean, she was in Don't Torture a Duckling, too, which is another giallo. It's just, I don't know, you just really can't watch enough of her.
Rico the Mean Machine with the big strip sequence at the, you know, it was like a drive-in theater deal. Mm-hmm. You know, we were saying that Ken Daniels, he needs to do something like that at the Georgetown drive-in next year for us.
I believe, though, if I'm not mistaken, too, Steve, I think Barbara Bach is in that, too, isn't she?
Yeah, Barbara Bach is the other lady in it. She's pretty much like, almost like you'd call the final girl in slashers, but she's in that as well. That's a really good one. I think No Shame or I think No Shame came out with that one. I'm not 100% sure, but they came out with a few others, like Scorpion's Tale or something like that as well, but not the same time.
Yeah. Something yeah, I want.
I think.
Go ahead. I was going to ask Steve though about it was an Argento movie that I've had for a while, but I've never watched. I think Anchor Bay came out with it too. The Cat of Nine Tails, which I know is another giallo movie.
he worked on. What are your thoughts on that? I don't hear a lot of people talk about that one.
Well, I was first, that might have been, even though I say Deep Red was my first giallo, that might have been the very first one I ever saw. They used to show that on afternoon movies during when I was a kid. Of course, it was very edited. It had to fit a 90-minute time slot, so, I mean, it was like an hour and 5 minutes or something after commercials. It's pretty cool looking as far as the visuals. The story is kind of strange about, it's got a little bit more of a, it has a little bit of dash of science fiction in it, but it definitely has the black glove killer in it, and it has a lot of cool scenery. Of course, Argento, his cinematography and stuff like that is just top-notch, and especially around that time period. So I won't say it's a great Argento movie, but if you take a context of all the movies he made around that period, it's really good.
Cool.
Yeah, I've actually got that movie, and I've just never got around to watching it. It's one of the ones that I never have watched. But when you talk about, you know, when I think about giallo, I automatically think of three movies, and that's Deep Red, Bow with Crystal Plumage, and Tenebra, or however you pronounce that.
Tenebra.
Yeah, those are the three that, I don't know, those are probably my three favorites, actually, of the whole genre.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I could definitely agree with that. I mean, they all have their merits, and then it's funny because the way you say that, that you have one that's in the end of the 69, you have one in the 70s, and then one in the early 80s.
Yeah, so that's like a favorite for each decade, Uncle Bill. There you go, buddy.
Well, you got to think about all the different memorable scenes. And I think probably the most memorable scene that I can ever think of from like any of those movies. There's actually two. Of course, there's the fucking weird little puppet thing that everybody always talks about. But there's also the scene in Tanaba where the girl's putting on her shirt and she's got it almost pulled up, you know, over her head, and the guy comes up behind her with the straight razor and he slits like across and it cuts through the shirt first, like and she's looking like through the shirt, and it's like there's like a split second, and then he like splatters her with blood. That's just like one of the best visual sequences of any of those movies.
Well, plus you got the big crane shot that precedes that scene, just freaking awesome.
Yeah, plus you got two hot ass naked women just wandering around for no reason whatsoever.
That's always good. That's always good.
Yeah, and you know the music that's playing in the background, it's called Lesbo.
Yeah. Oh god.
Some more of the Fulci stuff, though. I mean, Fulci's done really more giallo movies than a lot of people think. I mean, we mentioned Don't Torture a Duckling, which was one of the very first Fulci movies that I remember seeing, because didn't that one come to DVD almost? I think it might have been one of the first ones to come to DVD. And then you also have Lizard in a Woman's Skin, which I know, you know, it was like just a bizarre psychedelic mindfuck of a movie. Which I'm not a big fan of that. I think Steve is. Steve seems to like The Lizard in a Woman's Skin a little more than we both do. I don't think Uncle Bill likes it either.
No, Steve, no.
How dare you, Steve? I think we probably lost Steve again. He's fucking, his microphone is fucked up.
That's all right. We can carry on the conversation until we get your shit together.
Yeah, but Lizard in a Woman's Skin, I mean, I couldn't imagine watching that fucking movie again. I remember that one day. Because that was like, for us, that was the big movie. Because at this point in time, they'd released, you know, City of the Living Dead, Zombie, The Beyond, what else? House by the Cemetery, all that other stuff. And then you hear Lizard in a Woman's Skin, the ultimate fucking Fulci movie, and then here we were watching it, and it was like, it was a total
disappointment. Little did we know, though, that there were so many Fulci films that didn't actually come out that they were getting ready to release, and like 95% of them were fucking horrible.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of like Lizard, Woman's Lizard Skin, but there are a lot of bad movies by Fulci.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. We watched one the other night, The Black Hat. Goddamn.
Yeah, for anybody listening, though, that's curious about older Fulci movies and stuff, please, God, avoid The Black Hat and Door into Silence. Those are two of the most worthless movies. I think... I don't know who put out Door into Silence. It might have been...
You're the one got it, didn't you? You got it.
I know. It wasn't like a mainstream company, though. Like somebody, it might have been No Shame or somebody like that. I don't know.
No.
No, it might have been Severin.
Yeah, I mean, this is just recently, so No Shame's been out of business for a couple months.
Okay. It might have been...
Black Cat again.
I think it was Severin.
I got Black Cat again.
I think it was Severin that came out with it, actually.
Yeah, I got Black Cat again just because I wanted to watch it again.
I don't know what the fuck's wrong with you, Steve. You must have been really drunk when you ordered it, at least. That's what, like, there's certain movies that Fulci has done that 5-6 years after I've watched them, I've never had the desire to ever fucking watch them again. Like, Liz and a Woman's Skin is the same deal. I mean, I couldn't imagine anybody ever wanting to watch Door into Silence. I didn't even watch it once all the way through, to be honest with you. I turned it off.
Have you, that was just sidetracking. There was a movie called Red Monks that he directed. I don't know if there's any other titles for that movie, but I never heard of it before, but it's pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much any movie, and I'm not going to say every one of them, because there's always... I mean, I like The Psychic. The Psychic is pretty decent. That's really pre-zombie Fulci.
Yeah.
But anything, usually anything before 1979 or after 1984 is not worth your time with Fulci. I mean, I would say 90% of the time. Because all the stuff that he did, like there's tons of stuff that he did in the 90s, early 90s, that's just, it's just a fucking joke. Like Demonia. I don't know if you have that.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was really in it for a paycheck after a while. He was so sick during most of those films that he couldn't even finish. Like Zombie 3, you know, he starts in halfway in, gets sicker and shit, and has to quit.
Yeah.
And that movie is just... It really is a mess of a film, but for some odd reason, like, there's parts of that film that are so hilariously bad that they're almost watchable. But you can really tell that he directed parts of it, and then you can really tell that he didn't direct parts of it.
I mean, that's the thing. I think that just because they're Italian, you put Argento and Fulci together. But Argento is just way better of a filmmaker. I mean, he's made a lot more movies that are, even to this day, I mean, I know movies like Do You Like Hitchcock was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like Mother of Tears. I know some people were let down by it. But, I mean, if you compare that to the stuff all the other guys are making now, you know, look at what Romero's making now. I even like
The Card Player. A lot of people don't like that movie, but anyway.
Yeah.
We're talking giallos, or we're getting sidetracked.
Yeah, but I want to mention one, though, just in case it doesn't get brought up for the rest of the time. It's probably one of the most enjoyable films that would be classified as a giallo to me, because it's like a slasher film more than anything, too, is Bay of Blood.
Right.
Twitch of the Death Nerve also, yeah.
Yeah, which is just an absolutely... It's amazing to me that film was made. When was it made, Steve? 71?
Yeah, it was in the early 70s, very early 70s.
Yeah, and just the amount... It basically is like all the modern slasher films that you see now... Was the way that film is set up. Like, there's a group of teenagers that are staying at this, it's like a mansion-ish kind of farm kind of place. And, you know, they're getting picked off by this guy. And just the way that it's shot, too, where, you know, he was so adept at using the really vivid colors and stuff. So when somebody buys it in this film, there's blood and shit just flying all over the place, and it's so grand.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, I was talking to CK earlier, and it was basically, I was saying that the giallos of the 70s morphed into the slashers of the 80s, and then that was pretty much a archetype of that changeover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I couldn't really believe how good it was or how much it reminded me of stuff from the 80s. Well, I guess how much stuff from the 80s reminded me of that. I mean,
well, a lot of the visuals too. I mean, just the it's very reminiscent of not just Friday the 13th, but any of the wilderness slasher movies, you know, that came in the decade before, you know, like Just Before Dawn, The Burning, stuff like that. I mean, it's just, and I think that even, was it Friday the 13th Part 2 that pretty much directly mm-hmm. copied a couple of sequences, pretty much shot for shot, you know, one of the machete, stabs and, it's a spear or something like that.
Spear?
Yeah, that's what it
was.
Yeah,
the spear.
It's always amazing to me that nobody ever talks about that from, like, Friday 13 Part 2. Like, you never hear anybody mention that from the cast or the crew or anything like that, and it's so fucking glaringly obvious.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's I guess they benefit from the fact that a lot of people have never even heard of, and Steve's breaking something back there, I don't know, have never even heard of, you know, these movies, so... Oh hell, Steve broke it. He broke his glass dong he has getting ready to show up his butt.
my glass butt plug, it broke.
Damn.
It's like a pickle jar.
I don't even want to be reminded of that shit again. Oh God.
So, if I had to ask both of you guys, in your mind, what is the best giallo? I kind of have an idea, because mine is pretty much the same, but what would your guys' choices be?
Uncle Bill, you go first.
Well, I have to say, even though I can't ever fucking pronounce it, I'll pronounce it like three different ways during the course of this, I'm sure, but it would be... Tenebra. Yeah.
Tenebra.
It definitely be that one.
Yeah, I'd have to go with an Argento one as well, but I'd probably go with the bird with the crystal plumage just because it was kind of the one that started it all for Argento, you know, and it led to all the other movies afterwards. And I think also, too, it's the only one, I think it's the only Argento movie on Blu-ray. So, and that's
oh God, yeah, that would be one of your criteria for it, wouldn't
it? Well, I take that back. I think there is one other one that Blue Underground released, the Stendhal Syndrome. Yeah. Which I don't have that one, but yeah, just the visuals in the movie alone, and I don't know, I just really liked that movie quite a bit. I was surprised, actually. Because what the fuck kind of name is that, anyway? The bird with the crystal plumage. Like, what in the fuck?
Well, he had a whole series of animal films, I think. That
mm-hmm. Yeah, the animal trilogy.
Right.
You had the bird with crystal plumage, you had the Cat of Nine Tails, and you had this third movie, which is just within the last year released,
Four Flies on
Grey Velvet.
Right. I've actually not seen that. I think that that's another one that's pretty expensive out, isn't it, on DVD?
Well, I got it quick as it came out, so.
I think it came, was that, who released that one, Steve?
Maya Communications.
Yeah, that's the one that they released, all kinds of stuff like that. But yeah, if you want to buy it on the internet right now, I think it's like, if you can find it, it's upwards like 20-something bucks.
Yeah, which is silly.
I mean, yeah, unfortunately, there's a few documentaries about Argento, and there's one that I really like, but it's called The Eye for Horror, but it kind of runs the twist in that movie of Four Flies on Grey Velvet, so I was kind of like, crap, I already know what's going to happen, but, you know, whatever.
Whatever.
So what would you say, though, Steve? It's your favorite.
What's that? Well... I mean, to be honest, you guys got great choices there as well, but to me, I mean, you got all the stuff that came later in the 70s with all the exploitation components with nudity and extra violence, but to me, the ultimate movie that I would call a giallo would be Deep Red. I mean, that is a true mystery. It's got all kinds of violence in it. It just it looks incredible. It's got a great soundtrack. So that's my choice for the best giallo there is.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to say, though, that all of Argento's films from that time period had a great soundtrack, mostly thanks to Goblin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all that stuff is amazing. But, yeah, I actually went back and watched that one not too long ago, and you can go back, and I don't want to give away, like, the scene for anybody that hasn't seen it, but there's, like, a mystery throughout the whole film about one particular scene.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, who is seen in that scene, and you can go back and actually pick it up, you know, when you rewatch the film. And that's just so fucking cool that you can go back into a movie and kind of see. And I never caught it to begin with, but. You
know. Right. I mean, it's amazing. In most mystery movies, there isn't a scene like that that tell it. If you go back, you can actually see who the killer is.
Right.
So. Yeah. I mean, that's just amazing, and like you say, no one sees that when they first view the movie.
What is up with Deep Red, though, as far as releasing goes? Like, who owns the rights to that now? I think it's out of print, isn't it?
As far as I know, I mean, Blue Underground released the last edition of that a couple, like a year or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think I've got the old Anchor Bay version, so I don't have any idea.
Yeah, me too. I got the big dual disc that you get the soundtrack or something with it, or the 25th anniversary CD DVD that had the documentary about it as well.
Well, Jesus Christ, Steve, you've got all kinds of that shit.
I know. I just lost all kinds of money. Like I was telling CK, I used a credit card to buy all the shit back in the late 90s. I'm still paying it off.
Well,
okay, so I hope you move and change your name.
I wish I could have.
Yeah, back then, I mean, when them DVDs first came out, them fuckers was $20, $25 at least.
Well, there was a time there where they really were under 20 bucks. I mean, yeah, the of course, like you say, the big ones were a little more, but like you know, like some of the Fulci movies were like $16, $17, $18, so...
Yeah.
I didn't even hesitate, dude. I just put them on there. Bam, 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 bam.
How long?
Yeah.
It's sad I can remember when, like, Dawn of the Dead was a collector's item to find that. Like, it was like the Holy Grail to find it. Now there's, like, a million different versions of it, and you can buy the Ultimate Edition for, like, 20 bucks. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, like, some of the stuff you can get in Walmart now. Like, thinking back, you know. Just 5 or 6 years ago, did you ever think you would be able to buy Dead Alive in Walmart? I mean, it's just bizarre.
Yeah.
No,
I never thought I'd even see something like Inside in Walmart. I mean, they had the damn unrated version of Inside in Walmart, though.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they did for a brief period. I think they took it off, though, after they somebody swore,
yeah.
Like, hey, you know, you might want to watch that.
Yeah, might be some vagina cutting. You don't want to watch that.
Yeah, there's all kinds.
We're
of
almost big fans of fetus killing, though.
Yeah.
That's what I hear.
Yep, Sam Walton, he's a zombie.
But I mean, I'd be surprised if we ever saw any of these. Like, if you ever see a Fulci movie in Walmart, I know something's wrong.
That's a sign of the apocalypse.
Yeah.
You gotta admit, though, that one thing you'll probably never ever see in any mainstream store is a giallo. I mean, for some reason, they just don't. Even among horror fans, they're just not really well represented, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just like more of an acquired taste. I mean, if you look at these, or you were collecting these, I guess, before my time. You know, in the digital age, you got all these options as far as the internet. They have all these tapes out in the in Greece has like a whole bunch of giallos from Italy, and of course now they have giallo or Greek subtitles on the videotapes and stuff like that. But it's pretty. I mean, there's so many movies out there that no one's ever heard of, but I think the cream of the crop has already been released.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, like the majority of stuff, seriously, that isn't on DVD now, like horror movie, even horror movie wise, you know, most of it is just not worth it. That's why it's not out there. Like, I would say Blood Diner would be a big one that, but like, think about it. I mean, that's a big one, but how many people actually gives a fuck about buying Blood Diner? Probably not that many. You know, probably less than,
I do.
Yeah, you probably do, but.
I do too.
As far as like,
commentary.
Yeah, I want to do it. But as far as like, you know, because a lot of people don't even know what the hell that movie is. Like, I'm sure you guys remember the Fright Night Film Fest from a couple of years
ago.
Where we were screening The Gate. Everyone knew what The Gate was. You know, The Gate was packed. And then when Blood Diner came on, people was like, what the fuck is this? You know, they just left. So not a lot of people know about it, and that's the thing that the studios care about. They're like, how many people are going to buy these movies? And I'd say with a lot.
Yeah, but to be fair though, they might have left because like everybody in our row was yelling about how gay The Gate was for fucking 90 minutes.
That's true, but the bottom line is though, you know, the majority of people don't know what Blood Diner is. Like I didn't.
No, and it's on the fringes. I mean, that's one of those things where unless you were a huge VHS fan in the 80s, you're not going to have any idea what the fuck that is. But, I mean, the same kind of can be said about Giallo, too. I mean, unless you're a huge horror fan, you're not even going to know what the hell that is. It's just, it's only for people that are really, really into the genre, I think.
No. But, yeah, I mean, as far as the Giallo, like the unknown Giallos or the hidden gems, stuff like that, that's even more unlikely to ever come to DVD, you know, I mean, it's just, it's one of those deals where, I mean, I know that I'm not a huge Giallo guy. I mean, I watch them from time to time, but, I mean, even for me, like, I wouldn't know, you know, any of these movies from anything else because I've just never heard of them.
I mean, Argento might release something here soon, you know, that nobody's ever heard of, like, Five Caterpillars on Cotton Pants or something like that.
That sounds like a classic.
Cotton Pants. Blood stains on cotton patties.
I think we need to make that. That could be the Dead Fish Giallo. That could star Kimalicious will star in it.
Oh, hell no.
She's getting a new Bob Rabouche, baby.
Hell. Well, what I would suggest if, there's a few that maybe you haven't seen. I was telling CK there's Strip Nude for Your Killer, which is pretty cool. And then there's another one called Sister of Ursula. Both of those are super sleazy, and I think they have a pretty cool vibe to them. So I think that those would be a couple to recommend if you've seen the rest of the pack there.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, we'll I'm not for certain, but I think at one time or another I could have actually gotten Sister of Ursula. Is that Severn too?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So I
Oh man.
Hello.
Are you shitting me?
Did something explode?
Oh, you're breaking up.
Don't you do it! Don't you do it!
Steve's had one too many beers, baby.
No, my freaking thing, I'm sorry, it was kind of weird there. My audio went out, so I was like, don't you do it. Don't you disconnect me again.
So.
Let me tell you something, Steve.
Yes, sir.
You get your shit together, buddy, now.
Violently.
My shit's all together. One big pile.
I'm surprised Uncle Bill, though, he hasn't mentioned his favorite Italian filmmaker.
Oh, God.
Poopy Avati.
Poopy Avati?
Yeah. The guy Woo! That did The House with Laughing Windows from 1976, also known as La Casa del Fanistra Cerradino.
Baklava.
Hell. So,
yeah. Is that really the guy's name? Please tell me it's not.
Poopy, yeah. P-U-P-I, Poopy.
It's
and then there's old
There's old shitty Ranello.
Spelled C-H-I-T-T-I. Shitty.
He was on Hollywood Squares one time, and they go, Shitty. What you say?
Hey, Shitty. Come here, Shitty.
Well, my name is Shitty Ranello.
What if his middle name was Richard?
My name is Shitty Dick Ranello. Over here. Oh.
thank those guys a lot for taking time. I know they were getting ready to do some drunken commentary work, and I know how hard that can be. So thank you. And thus leads us to number one, which, no surprise, is Deep Red. This movie is my first giallo, pretty much, when I was a lot younger. I can't remember if it was in the early 90s or late 80s, but I did see this movie on free TV. And it, you know, for the most part, it was unedited, the scratched up version, and I loved it. And for a while there, they showed a couple of movies unedited. I saw The Crazies unedited and had some nudity and stuff, and I was like, I'm gonna watch TV on Saturday night all every weekend. Of course, that didn't last long. I think that was the last uncut movie I saw. But anyway, Deep Red is just the ultimate. It's the alpha to and the omega of giallos to me. Even though it has a little bit of sleaze in it, but nothing compared to something like Strip Nude for Your Killer or even Torso. This movie is just all. It's got a great story. It actually has a mystery that does make sense if you pay attention. And the music, everything is just the perfect storm of a great movie for some geek like me. David Hemming is awesome in it, and he plays a pianist, and he happens to see a murder, and the rest of the time he's kind of looking around and also looking for the killer with Daria something. Dario Argento's life mate at that time, and mother of Aja, so she's always a very special lady. And thank you. Nicola, whatever. But anyway, I did know it, but I'm not going to look it up right now. And she plays a reporter, and they're kind of looking. The only, the Anchor Bay DVD that came out, I think in 2000 or 99 or whatever, was a revelation as far as how great it looked and stuff like that. Of course, I've said that before. The only good, bad thing is about it, there's like some slapstick comedy between David Hemming and Daria, and it's awful. But anyway, I mean, you gotta, I'll live with it, and, because there's some other scenes that are in Italian that do help the story along, so, you know, whatever. That's the best. I mean, you know, there may be some hidden gems out there, but I honestly don't see anything coming near Deep Red. Stuff like, what was it, Sister of Ursula came out. It's only a Italian language only, and with subtitles, which is, it's a good, fun movie. It's definitely sleazy, so, you know, and it has a very, unfortunately, for some people, a very strange device to kill some people. But, you know, and you got some other ones that I don't know. I guess, I'm not sure if they're a giallo or a slasher or in between. It's I think it was Franco's Bloody Moon. There's always stuff out there. There's all kinds of giallos that have never been on DVD, and they're out there on the internet and on VHS, and like the Greek. I see a lot of Greek VHS rips out there, so evidently Greece was like a haven, at least for VHS, for these movies. So there you go. That was my big special, and that's it for the year of 2009. Nothing crazy going on. I think this is my, as far as my concern, my best show. Just talking to people and stuff like that. It's a little different since I usually just talk to myself in this microphone, so I like doing that. I'm not very ambitious with this kind of thing, so don't expect me to do anything bigger than this. But that's my list, and I got a whole bunch of movies stacked up to watch for next year. So I'm sure I'll have a lot more to going on, and with the world of Eurocult exploitation and horror, and maybe a little more spaghetti westerns, who knows? But thanks for listening, and have a new year, a good new year, and I'm out. Peace. Eurocult is over. For now. For the rest of the year.
the price you have to pay if you wanna die.
That's the price you have to pay if you wanna die.